John Schumann of NBA.com joins us to talk about that. He's actually in Toronto. He'll talk about this game, and we'll talk about the Western Conference playoffs, of course, as well. John, how are you, sir?
I'm great, guys. How you doing?
Doing good.
Doing awesome. Is this a gentleman's sweep on our hands, as my co-host likes to call it, a five-game sweep, or does Toronto have what it takes, both statistically and practically, to put together more of a challenge for Cleveland?
Yeah, I'm not ready to say Cavs in five at this point. Obviously, tonight is you know, the biggest game of the series in regard to whether the Cavs are going to feel a little pressure or not. You know, I think we tend to forget these teams are only separated by one game in the regular season, and that the Raptors won both games in their building in the regular season. You know, the Cavs were playing fantastic through their first 10 playoff games. But, you know, they were bound to come back down to earth a little bit. One, in regards to their shooting. Two, you know, I don't think a team that really has really put pressure on them defensively as of yet. And I think game three, Toronto did a nice job of sort of executing offensively and finding, you know, the weaknesses in the Cavs defense. And there are a few. You know, they play some very potent offensive units, but those units include some guys that aren't, you know, all world defenders. So if you can execute offensively and pick the right spots, and pick the right targets to attack on your end of the floor, you can do some damage and score with the Cavs. I think slowing them down over seven games is pretty much impossible, but you can score with them if you do the right things offensively.
What are some of those things they need to do offensively? You said finding the holes in their defense, but are there certain guys they should be attacking? Are there certain guys that maybe should have the ball in their hands more? What was it about that game three game plan that worked so well?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, the Cavs, sort of have these floor spacing units, but in their entire rotation, now that Timofey Mozgov has been, you know, out of the rotation, they don't have any rim protection. You know, they start Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love. Neither of those guys is much of a shot blocker. Then they move Love to center for a little while, and then they bring in Channing Frye and have him play center. He's not a shot blocker or much of a rim protector either. So if you can get past the initial line of defense, and I think what the Raptors did well on Saturday was set really good screens. You know, like if the ball handler and the screener are in sync and you can get, knock their guards off the ball a little bit, then you can attack that second line. And yes, Kevin Love should be a target of your pick and rolls, you know. You know, Channing Frye, if he's out there, should be a target of your pick and rolls. You should attack J.R. Smith in transition. You know, like there's been this sort of storyline around the Cavs that J.R. Smith has accepted the role of the primary wing defender on this team. But, you know, come on, J.R. Smith is not, you know, Kawhi Leonard or anything like that. So this team, you know, when you think about it, in their starting lineup, LeBron James, the only guy you really have to be scared of on that end of the floor. You know, like, you can attack these other guys and make them work and make them move. And the Raptors had a top five offense in the regular season. They have the ability. They have the guards. Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Corey Joseph all played really well in game three. They have the ability to punish the Cavs on that end of the floor.
Mozgov played an important role for the Cavs a year ago. Is he too much of a liability now in every other area that it's a good idea not to have his defense out there?
Yeah, I think they've just had so much success without him. You know, the starting unit, when you have LeBron, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, it's potent. And then they go to their bench units with either Irving or LeBron out there with four shooters. And it's near impossible to guard. Mozgov obviously makes them much easier to guard on the other end of the floor. So, yeah, it's a trade-off for them a little bit, but I think they've found the right formula in that, you know, we're not going to be the best team defensively, but, you know, you're not going to stop us. And, you know, if you have LeBron James on the floor and four shooters around him, you know, it's a pick-your-poison situation for the defense. You know, the Raptors sort of picked their poison in game one and got beat at, you know, they didn't want to get beat at the three-point line. They got beat at the basket, same sort of thing in game two. game three, I thought they were a little bit sharper with their rotations, just a little, you know, so they weren't giving so much away. You know, they were just a little bit sharper, a little bit more in sync defensively, where, you know, they bent, but they didn't break on the end of the floor.
All right, let's move over to the real series, the one over in the Western Conference where two teams actually do have a chance to advance. We're in a position, though. Oklahoma City, 2-1 lead. Are they the favorites to pull this off at this point, being up 2-1 and having one more game at home here in Game 4 to go up 3-1 if possible?
You know what? I'm surprised as anybody. You know, I sort of chalked up Oklahoma City beating San Antonio to sort of a matchup thing where, you know, their athleticism was just too much for the older Spurs. I even chalked up their game one victory to, you know, Russell Westbrook just making a lot of pull-up jumpers and the Warriors not being very disciplined offensively, taking some bad shots. But, you know, game three last night was impressive. You know, they beat them on both ends of the floor. They beat them with a small lineup. They beat them with a big lineup. You know, I'm still not one to pick against the Warriors until they've lost four games, or until it's too late, probably. You know, because they just, you know, they were so good last year. They won 73 games this year. They're a fantastic team on both ends of the floor. But, you know, the Thunder, you have to give them credit. They've taken their game to a new level, you know. You know, we can only evaluate a team as far as what we've seen, and when they come with more that, you know, and play better than what we've ever seen them play, you know, it could be tough to evaluate and see, is this the real thing, or is it just a small sample size in a playoff series, and things are going to come, they're going to come back to earth a little bit. So you know, I'm anxious to see game four. I think it's going to be a huge game in regard to, you know, who eventually wins a championship.
Draymond Green is obviously a stat stuffer, in not always in the points column, but everywhere else for the Warriors. Potential suspension for him. How much harder would that make things for Golden State?
Very. I mean, he's the most important part of their defense, and he's basically the second most important ingredient in their offense. He's evolved into the perfect complement for Stephen Curry. When Stephen Curry draws the attention of the deep of two defenders, he can get the ball to Draymond Green, who can take advantage of like a 4-on-3 situation on the other end of the floor, on the other side of the floor. So he's turned into a terrific playmaker at the four offensively, and obviously he's a huge part of their defense. So if he is out, that's obviously, you know, next to almost and maybe just as important as if Golden State was missing Stephen Curry.
Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, the fact that they've had success in this series together, despite, I guess, game two when they didn't play that well, they're still up 2-1. Does this help at all in keeping Durant in Oklahoma City? Do you think with each game, the more confidence they get, he's going to look at this situation and say, yeah, this maybe is the best long-term fit for me?
I have to imagine so. You know, I always thought that the best situation for him would be one more year in Oklahoma City. Do a sort of a LeBron-type contract where it's a two-year contract but with an option in the second year so that he could leave. You know, the cap is going to be at its peak next summer. So this summer, guys are going to make lots of money, and they should certainly, most of them should certainly sign long-term deals this summer. But if a guy has the ability to be a free agent next year too, that's another time where guys are going to make money. So I always thought that one more year in Oklahoma City, and then him and Westbrook can make their decisions together next year, would be interesting. But I believe that the way they've played, you know, they beat a 67-win team in San Antonio. They're up 2-1 against a 73-win team. Even if they were to lose this series, they've been, you know, they're tasting success at the absolute highest level in the league. And so they should, you know, I think that should only encourage him to stay and believe that things can get better.
John Schumann is our guest here on ESPN 700 talking NBA playoffs. He does advanced stats for NBA.com. Back to that Eastern Conference final series. Kyrie Irving has had a huge playoff this year for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and a lot of it is because he and LeBron seem to have found a nice balance in sharing a scoring load. From an analytics standpoint, is Cleveland a better team when Kyrie is the leading scorer in a game or when LeBron is?
You know what? LeBron is taking on a sort of a different role as Kyrie has come on in these playoffs. LeBron has, his jump shot hasn't been there this year. Let's say that. But it hasn't had to be. And he's attacked the basket more. He's taking less jumpers than he ever has. So he is less of a primary scorer. And that's worked out fine for them. They lost in game three, but they're still 10-1 in the playoffs. So I think when he's more of in a playmaking mode and can pick his spots, and like I said, when you put four shooters around him, that's a dangerous offensive team, whether he's the one shooting the ball or not. And it does give him more space to attack, and so he doesn't need to be the shooter that he has been in years past. So I don't think they care who the leading scorer is. I think they're comfortable with the formula that they have, where surround LeBron with shooters. When LeBron comes off the floor, let Kyrie do his thing, which is a little bit more one-on-one action. And so that's going to come and go a little bit. When he's shooting off the dribble a lot, those shots are going to come and go. He was hot in games one and two, but obviously cooled off in game three. Like I said, I don't think it's about who's the leading scorer. I think it's just about the offensive formula as a whole and the way they're spacing the floor and shooting threes, but also that opening up lanes for attack from both of those guys.
And to get into the finals, is Cleveland at this point as much of a title contender, as much of a favorite as maybe the other two in the West? Are we looking at three different teams here? We can say, yeah, all three of these teams have a reasonable and legitimate chance to win the title, and none of them would surprise me at this point.
Yeah, I think so. As well as the Cavs were playing in the first couple rounds, I thought Golden State, just because they're the better defensive team, between Cleveland and Golden State. But now that Golden State's sort of in a hole a little bit, it's hard. There's the only scenario that's tough to believe would be Toronto winning this thing, but anything else could sort of see it happening. In an Oklahoma City-Cleveland series, I think you'd have to favor the Cavs just because of home court advantage. That's the one thing that Oklahoma City has going against them right now, is it come the finals, they're going to be on the road no matter who they're playing.
Is there any guy in the playoffs now remaining on these four teams that's either overperforming or underperforming the standard he kind of set for his team in the regular season? Are you seeing from an analytics standpoint one guy either on the positive or negative end whose numbers just don't match with his usual production?
Oh, that's a good question. The Raptors have just been so up and down in these playoffs. You have a good Kyle Lowry game one day and a bad DeMar DeRozan game, and then they'll swap roles. And so that's a team that was a lot more consistent in the regular season, and the playoffs are a different game, so it's tough to say that they're really underachieving offensively. But they have in general recently. They had a good offensive game seven against Miami, a good game three here against Cleveland. I think Deion Waiters is a guy that's made some big plays for Oklahoma City, who I don't necessarily trust from game to game and from possession to possession. But he's been big and he's been important. And Irving is another guy his efficiency, the way he plays, he doesn't play the most efficient offensive game. And so he's one that, if he's playing a lot of one-on-one, the defense could sort of be okay with that, even if he's making some shots here or there. And they have to believe that, the next time LeBron sits down or in the next game, that those shots aren't going to fall as often.
John, before we let you go, are there any players in these playoffs, or give me a player in these playoffs on both sides of it, who's made themselves the most money in these playoffs and who's lost themselves the most money?
Oh, wow. In this series, Bismack Biyombo has obviously made himself some money. He's on a pretty small contract with Toronto and can opt out of his contract next year. and Toronto will have a tough time signing him, really, because they're not going to have the cap space. They don't have his full bird rights, so they're not going to have the cap space to sign him unless DeMar DeRozan goes to another team. He's definitely one. You know, I think Matthew Dellavedova hasn't stood out, but I think he's due for a big payday. You know, I heard Stan Van Gundy say in an interview recently that, you know, the backup point guards in the last few teams on these teams that are having some success are really good, and Dellavedova is one of them. Corey Joseph is another, but he's signed long term. In the other series, you know, I think Harrison Barnes has been a little bit of a disappointment, and I'm really curious to see what happens to him in free agency. He's a restricted free agent. Golden State obviously would like to keep their group together, but if they can upgrade there, I'm sure they would. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of money he gets. He's been propped up by a great team, and it'd be interesting to see if another team thinks he could have a bigger role without the support that he has at Golden State.